Hi everyone, this is Aiden. I'm going to place myself on mute.
Thank you, Aiden. Hello everyone, welcome to the meeting. We are 1 minute to the top of the start time. Thank you very much. We will begin shortly. May I also remind everyone to please mute your microphone if you're not speaking. Please mute your microphone when you're not speaking. Thank you so much.
Hello, everyone. I think it's time to start the call. We're already 2 minutes past nine, and I have several items to discuss. So let's start the recording. Please start the recording.
Thank you very much, Rafiq. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the monthly NCSG policy call on Tuesday, 17th of July, 2018 at 1200 UTC. On the call today, we have Rafiq Damak, Akin Remy Peter Taiwo, Aiden Ferdling, Claudia Lucina, Pharrell Foley, James Gitao, Yolf Helsingers, Chris Seaborn, Olga Kiriluk, Shah Rahman, Tatiana Tropina, and from staff we have myself, Mariam Bakoshi. I'd like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. And when you're not speaking, please mute your microphone. Thank you very much, and over to you, Rafiq.
Thanks, Mariam, and thanks for everyone for joining today in our monthly NCAG policy call, which is held usually prior to the Geneso Council meeting. And so it's, as always, an opportunity to prepare for that meeting and to discuss the motion that will be voted and other policy items. And it's also an opportunity to get updates about anything in PDP working group or a public comment and so on. So for today, the agenda will be somehow particular. So the council meeting, while we have the agenda with several items, we'll say like 40% of the time of that meeting will be around the approval of the PDP charter and initiating that process. So I think it's for that reason we need to focus on that part. And also to give more updates about what happened in the drafting team for the EPDP charter and scoping, so we can have everyone with the same understanding about what's going on there and also what we can expect in that process. So, as I said, usually we go through the agenda. We'll do like some shifting here and start first with the EPDP. Mariam, can you go to the agenda first, please? Okay. So we will skip those agenda items, but we will come back to them later, since we have another motion to vote in the next council meeting. So the first is about the initiation of expedite policy development process on the ICANN board temporary specification on GTLD registration data. So I think most of you heard for the last days, either in the mailing list or during Panama meeting or in our last NCAG call, about the EPDP. And so this is the time that we'll have to vote on the approval of that charter, and so by that initiating that process. I shared a few hours ago two documents. One is the Google Doc, which is the charter with all sections except the scoping of the scope, and a separate attached Word document, which is about the scope. While all the section or elements of the charter are important, I think the focus usually is about the scope because it define or outline what the team or the working group will focus on. And talking about the scope, I would like to ask Stephanie, if she is here with us, maybe to give kind of briefing and maybe outline what are the main items on that scope and what we can expect. Since she was in the part of a small team within the drafting team, I know it's a little bit complicated, but that small team of I mean, small number of people worked on the scope of the charter for a few days. I think it was quite intense because they have a really short time frame to work on that. And so she's, I think, the most knowledgeable person about that part, and she can give us more updates or, let's say, highlight the main parts. Can you hear me? And in the meantime, I would like to ask Mariam to put or to upload the scope document into Adobe Connect. Stephanie, are you with us?
Thanks very much, Rafi. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, very good. Thanks very much, Stephanie Perrin, for the record. As Rafiq was saying, this was a serious amount of work to get the document ready for approval at the council meeting this week, the document being the charter for the expedited policy development process, and complicated by the fact that we've never really done an expedited policy development process before, although that really doesn't have a material difference in terms of the charter, just that we have a very shortened time frame to achieve this work. Now, the first thing that we had a major argument about was the composition of the team, and I think we may have spoken about that recently. At least you may have seen traffic on the list, that the drafter of the original document, that would be Keith Drazik from the registries, VeriSign, had proposed us having only two members on the group as opposed to the business constituency having six, at two per constituency, and then that's moved to four at some point, but it went back and forth. We had a bit of an argument about that, in which we actually had to get Milton to phone Keith and have a little chat with him, that this was a, you know, lie down and die on the tracks effort. Part of the reason we were adamant about this is, well, A, we fighting for privacy for the last 20 years.
The host has left the meeting to speak with meeting support and will rejoin soon.
Okay, can you still hear me? Good. Yes?
Yes, Stephanie, please go ahead. Just, Marian, we'll come back later. Don't you?
Okay, so, it's not just that we're the ones that we've been pushing for this for a long time, but for those who haven't followed GNSO restructuring, the business constituency with whom we share the non-contracted party's house has been pushing since the inception of NCUC to reduce our presence on council. And in my view, at least, and I think it's shared by some of my fellow councillors, any move at all to disrupt the delicate balance of seats on council, which I would read this as being, has to be fought and fought hard. So we did. We got our six seats back. The actual composition of the group is now threatens to be unbalanced because we have been letting in all of the advisory councils at 2 to 3 seats each with a couple of alternates. So that means the GAC, the Security and Stability Advisory Council, the ALAC, who are not very happy with their two seats, they wanted more than that, and the Root Server Advisory Committee is the latest. They discovered they were not on the list and wanted to be on the list, or on the committee, rather. Now, this would be fine. But I would warn everybody that I think that the common characteristic for all of these advisory committees is that they basically share the view of the security community that they want a free and open who is. So it's really one opinion coming in through all these advisory committees. So you can imagine that there has been a lot of traffic on these issues, and it's still going on. So what happened last week was that we struck a small group, one representative from the different from each constituency. So I was NCSG. Keith Drazik was the pen, basically, for the registry. Susan Kawaguchi represented business, and Paul McCready represented the IPC. And together we went over the draft that Keith had come up with when we were in Panama, and continued to work on the difficult issues. Now, scope, once we got beyond composition, scope was a very difficult issue because the intellectual, somebody's not muted, the intellectual property community was adamant the appendix of the interim specification, which refers to access, they wanted it included and that we start work on it, obviously, right away. They rejected the concept of a phased approach. There has been a debate over whether we should have two expedited PDPs, because the business community and the intellectual property community are refusing, backed by the GAC and the others, to work and then the second work. In other words, the first determination
is whether the operator, just to let you know that Asen is after joining the conference.
Okay, is Asen okay, so please mute if you could. Where was I? Oh, yeah. So the first job would to determine whether the investigation is actually going to work, whether it's compliant with law, and we have in the meantime received a letter from the what used to be the Article 29 Committee and is now the European Data Protection Board. Basically, my read of it is saying, well, yeah, nice that you're working on it, but keep going, and here are some issues you need to address. In particular, they pointed out that an access system is totally voluntary, that the controllers are in charge of who gets third-party access. So we've been trying to say that for, these many years, but nobody's listening, of course. And I believe that the non-contracted parties, other than ourselves, want ICANN to come up with a framework for that and make it mandatory, just like WHOIS was mandatory in that. So, in any case, that issue has predominated the discussion of the mission and scope. So, it's up on the screen. If you, who's got cursor control or scroll control? Everybody? Okay. I guess, unfortunately, this is no pagination, so that doesn't make it particularly useful. But, Mariam, if you are scrolling, could you go back to the top of the page? Okay. So, background, we argued about that, but it's all right now, I believe. Second page, please. Okay, so the second page is the terms, the purposes for processing of registration data. This contains a number of gating questions in it, which we have to answer before we move to the work on the access model. One of the reasons we're insisting on this is you cannot possibly figure out who has a legitimate need to access the data until you figure out what the original purposes of collecting, using, and disclosing the data are. And so we have argued back and forth that we obviously want it phased, no work at all on the access model until we're done the first part. The other parties are willing to compromise and say, okay, once we have the gating questions answered and an interim report released, then we can start work on the access model. This, in my view, is an important point of principle here. Just because the committee has come up with an interim report, community feedback on that interim report is vital. We are supposed to, in the multi-stakeholder model, consult the community and then reflect their comments in a redraft. So to move ahead on an access model before that stage is done is a breach in our regular conduct. I won't say that procedure works all the time, but theoretically that's what we're supposed to do. So anyway, those are the purpose questions. And if we could move on to the next page. I'm not going to go through line by line because it's quite long. The part two there, the required data processing activities. That's a loaded word, by the way, that may be being misused in the interim spec. But these are basic gating questions about what the registrar should be collecting. And what legitimate reasons for collection are. Now, there was a very long and, if I may say so, tedious debate in the RDS CDP where the third-party actors tried to get every possible use that they could have of data included in the legitimate purposes for collection because they, in my view, misread the GDPR deliberately so that they could get a broader scope of data processing activity for ICANN. An example being, we have to be able to give data to academic researchers, so if we don't list academic research as a purpose for collection, we won't be able to disclose it. That is not an accurate reading of how data protection works. Anyway, the section C there is the transfer from registrar to registry, and everybody should be aware that there are many policies related to who is that are in question now with the GDPR, one of them being fix who is, the transfer of the last remaining registries that do not have fix data, and that would be VeriSign and .com, .org, those early ones. That are still thin registries. So, keep on going there. Section D, transfer of data from the registrar registry to the data escrow provider, also potentially illegal, and the waiver policy, that is the only way that you could stop transfer of data to an unsafe country, namely the United States, that has not worked well, although ICANN finally started to accommodate European registrars back about a year ago. Transfer of data from the registrar registry to ICANN, there are policies, at least the policies regarding ICANN's ability to access personal data need to be clarified. The publication of data, then that, of course, refers to the classic who is. We have an interim spec that has detailed what folks are going to, they're using the term redact, but in fact the reverse is the data protection view of what's happening. What might you be allowed to publish? You'll note the note there, questions under F are gating for the determination of access. Well, they're all gating. This is still a sloppy document, and we've commented on it umpteen times. If I may just make an editorial note here, one of the things we are going to have to watch on the EBDP is version control, because what happened is we started the document as a Google Doc. Our edits were not on the document itself. They were to be sent to Marika. I did a full edit of the document in Panama, sent it, and then there was a complaint that it was way too many comments. Well, I'm sorry, it wasn't a good draft. What can I tell you? And, of course, you then have to, if those are not in the document, then you have to check back and see whether they have taken any of your comments. It becomes the only way to manage this, in my view, and I had this same problem when I was working on the expert working group, is to print them all out and have a gigantic binder with markers where you go back and forth, because I don't know about you guys, but I can't keep track of about 6 electronic versions on my laptop at once. It's just too hard. Maybe that's a factor of old age. Maybe you guys find it easy, you youngsters, but let me tell you, I need to have them kind of spread around me volcano style so that I can check each section, particularly when the order is changing. So that's just a note that we really need someone. It's a good job, actually, if I can do a little advertisement here on the side, Rafiq. There are many jobs that do not require in-depth knowledge of who is and of the many, many historical fights we've had over the various policies, but that would be really helpful. So if you feel like getting your feet wet, we're going to, I think, in the EPDP, I'm assuming I will be selected to be on it. That's why I feel I can speak on this. But we will have a back room, a strategy room, and if we could have some volunteers to help keep all the versions straight, because I don't think this problem's going to go away. And if we split into sub-teams, and that is provided for in this scope document, the problem gets even more insane. Anyway, carrying right on, then, so there's F there, and then G, data retention, and then the applicability of the data processing requirements, whatever that means. That central question on whether operators and registrars should be permitted or required to differentiate between registrants on a geographic basis. Extremely difficult for the contracted parties to do that because, you know, it means keeping track of where their customers are. We don't want that. And secondly, the next one is legal and natural persons. We had a huge fight on the privacy proxy services accreditation working group on that very issue, and we actually beat the IPC on that matter. And if you'll read the ECO workbook that Richard and his associates put together, they have a very good description of why registrants can't be doing that. And one should note that that's also something the data protection supervisors noted in their latest letter. It's in some jurisdictions, employees of a company would be entitled to data protection. So figuring this out in on an automated basis is a real mug's game. So we don't want to lose on that particular point, but it's still in there to be fought over yet again. I inserted what are the risks associated with differentiation of registrant status. We managed to get that in there, but it's a very long list of risks. Next page, if you will, please, Miriam. The transfer of data to the emergency backend registry operator, or eBiro, there's a discussion of whether we need a policy on that or need to deal with it. Section J is the part that we've been fighting over the most, and that is the matter of reasonable access. The interim specification says that registrars and registries have to provide reasonable access to third parties, and of course, all of these items in here we think should not be dealt with until after we have the first policy finalized. Partly for very sound logistical reasons. We've never been able to sort out a who is policy in this kind of aggressive timeline, which means done by Christmas, in order that the council can deal with it and we can do the required consultation process. However, they're trying to get a draft spec Messi out with the gaining questions answered by Barcelona. So this is, in my view, just hopeless. However, we soldier on. So under J, this gets into the details of how access should be provided. And, of course, the business community is, it wants who is kept to the maximum, and they are joined, of course, by all the other parties, the GAC, the ESAC, et cetera. Anybody who's in security doesn't want to give this up. So we have not agreed even that there should be a community-wide model, because let's face it, things have changed. Registrars and registries are liable, or the ICANN has declined to assert its controllership. And if it did, if it said we are the sole controller and you guys are data processors, then the liability would be on ICANN. On the other hand, if the data, if the registrars and registries are controllers, then they have the authority, and they only, to decide what data ought to be released in a framework or other. And then if they are joint controllers, then the data commissioners have said it's probably joint controllership. But that could be changed depending on ICANN's policies. And then they share the liability, and they have to sort out where that liability division lies. So, you know, really, to manage the items in J, we haven't even agreed that there should be a standard framework. And I'm going to keep fighting, because I don't think a uniform framework complies with law. Then we get down right into the weeds, which we have said all the way through this, certainly in my big edited version, and every time I've had another crack at it since then. We have basically told them, look, you're getting into implementation here, sorting out who is going to determine who a legitimate person is to be granted access to the data. That is way down into the weeds. That's not policy, you know. Now, contracted party or non-contracted parties, you know, the business constituents in the IPC, they basically, what they're driving for is, we are intellectual property lawyers, we should get access to all the data. And there's a distinction here that has been made in some rhetoric around this that you might want to be aware of, and that is the difference between tiered and layered access. I believe in data processing, at least data protection terms, the two are synonymous. However, they are being used in different ways. Layered being used in a way that implies once you qualify as, for instance, an intellectual property, you get access to all you can eat in this layer of data, things that might be required for a potential case. In tiered access, it implies more discrimination at the granular level. So I think those are terms that we'll exactly, Rafiq, yeah, layered is buffet and tiered is a la carte. So that's a distinction that we need to, if they're going to insist on this kind of reworking of the language, well then fine. But we'll have to have it defined in the documents. A major problem, of course, is that these terms have not been defined. So as we argue about the scope document, we argue about terms, and we don't actually have a common understanding of what we're talking about. So slightly crazy-making. Okay, next page, I guess. You can all see the very tendentious assertions in here. Moving on to K, and again, this is a gating question. So, you know, J is up there in the middle, and Farsi has pointed out that J should be somewhere else, but definitely not in the middle of these things. Sorting out ICANN's responsibility, I just described all of that, and the registrar's responsibility, and, you know, I think that's clear enough. Moving on to part four, the updates to other consensus policies. I have been pointing out that the number of police-related policies that are actually compliant with GDPR, it's a short list. Now, they're bringing in these other ones, URS, UDRP. They need to be revised as well, but there are ones much closer to ICANN, or rather to who is, such as the SIC policy and the Privacy Proxy Services policy that need to be revised. Now, under Privacy Proxy Services, and sorry for another digression, but I just want to point out to everybody that these are being priced out of the market. ICANN is insisting on a costing formula, a total cost recovery. So while we won the battle in the policy argument on keeping privacy proxy services available to individuals, because countries that don't have data protection law are still going to need this. While we won that battle, now in the implementation review team, these things are being costed out of the market, and the accreditation scheme is becoming so onerous that no registrar, particularly not the small ones, are going to be allowed, are going to be able to do it. They're just not going to offer the services. So, not to be discouraging, but, you know, we need a big, strong fight on that. That IRT is kind of on hold at the moment while all this EPDP stuff is going on. And the registrars are still fighting back. But fundamentally, they won't care once GDPR is implemented, the big ones at least. So, moving right along to the next page, here we have the system for standardized access, and we've fought over every word, I can assure you, over the last week. Work on this topic shall begin once the gating questions above have been answered. Now, you know, again, my take was this thing has to be accepted by the community before we start working on something. But that approach lost, and the decision we have to make is, do we go on record and vote against this document, which is the best we could get, just on principle, or do we go along to get along and accept it? So you can see the various detailed elements in this system for standardized access, some of which have already been referred to in the text above. Which, you know, the mixing of the two does not reassure me that we're going to actually not work on this until we're done. And as late as Sunday, I sent in comments saying, whoa, didn't notice that we're talking about subgroups. And if a subgroup is struck on day one of the EPDP to work on access, then we will have to send all our people to that subgroup because that's where the biggest fight is for the purposes of our stakeholders. Okay, moving right along to the terms of, I don't want to go over every little question here. Let me just do a little temperature. Is everybody following me at this point? I'm getting a terrible echo, so I presume. And whoever is unmuted, please mute again. Maybe we pause here for a few questions, just in case anybody has them. I realize I'm, you know, walking through deep stuff that those of us who've been fighting over it understand, but perhaps others are not following. I don't see any hands up.
Okay, thanks, Tiffany.
Here we are.
Thanks, Tiffany. I think that was... Sorry, yep, this is Rafik speaking. So, thanks, Tiffany. That was good, I think, refreshing brief about the several elements of OPS. So, I just want to make two comments before going to the queue. Regarding that, getting help and the idea of backroom, so I think we have this discussion in policy committee and see how we can organize ourselves and to coordinate so we can get everyone involved at the different level. So that's something we will do for sure. With regards about the voting, I mean, yes, I mean, we can vote against to make a point, but I think I double-check it for the threshold for voting. I don't think we can really stop the process. But I think what we can do really to be effective is not for the voting now. That's maybe, as you said, the best what we can get. I mean, it doesn't mean it's perfect. There are several flaws, but I think it's really time to think more how what we can do in the EPDP when we get our representatives selected and appointed is to really to think how we can strategize and how we can fight for each items in the charter, because at the end I can expect that there will be a lot of discussion and interpretation of every and each get a question. So this is just, I think, the first battle. There are more and more in the when the APDP will start. So just saying this, and moving to the queue, we have Kathy, and I think Stephanie, you want to comment. Kathy, please go ahead.
Can you hear me, Rafiq? Can you hear me?
Go ahead.
Okay, terrific.
Yes, you can hear me?
Okay, to everybody who's working on this, Stephanie and everyone else, what you're doing is incredible. Getting this edited to actually reflect what we need to legally do versus what everyone else wants to shove in and do for themselves and their communities is incredible. So let me agree with you that Access and Jay is way out of line. It shouldn't be here. And if it is here, it should be at the very, very end. So two questions, Stephanie. One is, where's the section on what happens when things go wrong? Am I missing it? What happens if there's a breach? What happens if there's some kind of data dump? What happens if there's a sale of data by the registries, the registrars, or those receiving the data? The other question I have is, there's a section here about ICANN receiving the data, and ICANN, too, is accuracy reporting system, has become a horror. They take anonymous complaints, often harassing against registrants, and will cancel domain names, if there's a comma missing. I mean, there's something strange going on there. So can ICANN's accuracy reporting system become a backdoor for getting data if IPC members file 2 million accuracy complaints? I was wondering if anyone thought about that. So two questions. One is, where's the section, not just on abuse of data, but when, you know, things actively go wrong, when third parties get the data or when someone does something they're not supposed to, because there are requirements under GDPR, of course, for that. And then what about ICANN getting data that it really shouldn't be getting? Thanks.
Stephanie, can you respond to this?
Yes, sure. There is a section that we have been arguing over, Kathy, Stephanie Perrin for the record. And I think I put in language that basically said what other laws, what other penalties should be considered in addition to penalties prescribed by applicable law. Not quite sure where that is. Needless to say, the IPC tried to fight us back on that. But that would certainly deal with ICANN stepping out of line. I mean, if ICANN steps out of line, it could be sued under the GDPR, but that's going to be really difficult and unwieldy. And, frankly, I don't think we're going to win a case on that. They're going to claim, administrative error or something like that. They definitely will have to revise their procedures for going ahead on anonymous complaints, because that doesn't meet any of the fairness requirements under GDPR. And I don't think, that is down into the implementation weeds. But ICANN is definitely a user of the data and needs all of those things should be set in policy as to what it does with respect to its own use of registrant data. Just a little note that that's something we're also fighting over. Whether we call it registrant data or registration data makes a big difference, because some of the data is not collected from the registrant. It is rather generated in the process of assigning a domain name, and we fought about that in the RDS. It's an important distinction because we want registration data. Once the registration data is generated, this is like the old fight we had back in the 90s over whether a telephone number was belonged to the individual or belonged to the telephone company that assigned it. The mere fact that the telephone company assigned it and owns the block of numbers doesn't mean that that's your personal information. The same thing with registrant versus registration. So we're fighting about that. But I take your point. We will get down into those weeds as we go over the interim spec. I am planning to do a detailed analysis of interim spec, sort of the annotated version. But I haven't done it yet. I mean, we've been just solid working on this. So I got to get that done before we actually start EPDP so that I can at least understand in my own brain how much they've messed up. The point I raised my hand on regarding the vote, I can see the argument that Rafiq is making that we should just get the vote out and go along. I actually disagree. I think it's important at this point in the proceedings because, you know, Keith has sent out a letter saying, well, the small team has all agreed. Actually, no. I've been objecting to Jay nonstop since the blessed thing was put in there, and I am overruled. So it's not like we've conceded the point, and I don't agree. I've been overruled. This is not rough consensus. And you know, welcome to the world we're going to face on the EPDP if we don't at least put a marker in and vote against Section J. I understand we're not going to win that vote unless the registries break ranks and vote with us. And they will be seen, they're in a difficult position because, quite frankly, they can live with the interim spec, I suspect. And if this thing doesn't come out the other end, let's be clear, the interim policy falls away and the registrars get back to doing whatever their lawyers tell them to do. That works in their favor. So I don't think that they have as many dogs in this game as the commercial guys do. So I think it's symbolically important. Otherwise, every time people will refer to this scope and say, well, you agreed to this. No, we didn't agree. We think it's legally wrong. And, you know, you can wait until we're proven right in court. Or you can at least note on the record that we don't agree and this is legally incorrect. I mean, I say that quite assuredly. There are things in here that are still legally incorrect, and yet we're charging ahead as if it were okay. So, you know, I if it were going to hold things up, but I've counted the votes just like everybody else has, and we can't win on this unless, as I say, registries and registrars break ranks and vote with us.
But just to clarify what I said about the voting is that I made that point because in relation to the last policy call we had 2 weeks ago, and there was kind of understanding at that time that vote can defeat the approval. I double check it in the bylaws for the threshold for the EPDP. The problem is that it's either the supermajority in each house, or it can be just simple majority in one house and the three quarter in the other house. So we can be overruled. That's why I wanted to highlight that, just to people to be aware that we may not be able to defeat. We can try, but we may not be able. Just that's why I want to highlight it as in term of voting. But I mean, if people feel that we need to vote against, at least to make the point, I mean, I see no problem. I think that that can make sense and that will be in the record. But that, I don't think that mutually exclusive is what I said, that we need to think already about what we need, what we should do in the EPDP. And I think, or I believe that you already made the one point that we need to have kind of an annotated analysis of the temporary specs, so people really be aware what's there and what are the implications. So just for clarification. But for other, I mean, that's a good question. How the registrar and the registry will vote? Until now, I remain really confused about what they were doing in the whole drafting. Okay. Stephen, I'm not sure. Is it an old or new hand?
Sorry, Pete, old hand.
Okay. So I think this, I mean, thanks again, Stephanie. That's really clear. Briefing about it's not an easy document. There are a lot of details, and I advise everyone to read it anyway. In particular, counselor, before the council meeting. But I'm asking here if there is any question regarding the scope part, or any comment that you something you want to clarify, since we still have Stephanie with us. Okay, I don't see any other questions. So we had the presentation about the scope and composition. The other section of the charter, I don't think they are controversial. Several of them are just the standard language. I don't know if anyone from the drafting team has anything to share here, but I don't recall any specific issue with them. So just want to be sure here that we have a clear understanding about the charter as a whole, or if people have any question or comment they want to ask. It's a good time to do so, since in just in 2 days we have to vote for or against this charter. Yes, Kathy, please go ahead.
Thanks, Harfi. So looking back at Section J, as well as the rest of it, it raises the question of legal advice. What kind of legal advice is going to be available to this EPDP? I mean, a lot of the skills for negotiating the frame, you know, the temporary specification, the rule are one thing. Section J is a whole different set. This access is a whole different set of expertise. That very few people in ICANN will have at this point in time. So where is the money and the provision for independent legal counsel, not ICANN legal counsel, independent legal counsel, because ICANN now has a vested interest in this process. And again, how can we shove Section J as far down the path as possible or into a different EPDP? Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. With regard to the legal counsel, I mean, independent one, I do believe that in the resource and working methods section, I don't have it at handy now, but I think we can share that document. Marion, can you please share the other document? So we have that part about, I think that was, requested several times that we have an independent legal counsel that we can, the APDP team can use, depending, I think, if there is consensus on that. So while there is the staff liaison, two staff liaison, one from GDT and one from the legal counsel, the APDP team should have its own independent resource, so it doesn't need to count on that council. I hope that maybe clarified. But I'm trying here to find that part just to be sure about the text. So it's in the working methods, and that will depend if the ICANN board will put the required budget for all what we ask it. So this is one, the recommended working methods and resource expect to be available. Yes, external legal counsel advice to be used when deemed necessary and budget-wise, such as for confirming the compliance of the proposed policy recommendation deliverable with GDPR. External legal counsel advice should be should only be sought if adequate support cannot be provided through existing resources, as well as data protection authority guidance that is already available. The decision to request external advice should be approved by the APDP team leadership. And also there is something maybe that can be useful, and we should really push for it, is to have external expert and advisor, such data protection GDPR expert. So this is the kind of thing we need to have, so we can, I think, to strengthen our argument within the APDP team. So, Kathy, does this respond to your question?
Yes, it does. Thanks, Rafiq.
Okay, thanks. I'm missing what is in that to be connected, so maybe there are some questions or comments. But just again, double checking if there is any question or comment or that people you want to make, that's really good time for that. Okay, Stephanie, I believe that you will need to leave us in a few minutes. So maybe before that, if you want to add something or you want to make any further comment, that's a good time for that. So.
Thanks, Rafiq. As I say, I think we need the document on the interim spec to be done, so I'm going to focus on that because for those who are maybe not as up on data protection law, not that I'm a lawyer, remember there's always this caveat that I know, still, I don't see us getting independent legal advice anytime soon, so, and I'm not sure that the registrars and registries care enough to spend ICANN money on outside legal counsel. So I think we need that document and we need to discuss it as a group so that we're sure we're all on the same page, because we will be fighting in detail over this stuff. So that's my immediate focus. Happy to answer any questions, and I think the sooner we get a group of volunteers kind of focused on this in the back room to help out whoever is selected for the EPDP and the backup people. Remember, I think we need a total of 9 there, 6 regular members and 3 backup. And we did fight pretty hard to keep those, so I hope we fill them, you know. There was some discussion earlier among the counselors about whether 30 hours a week is a realistic amount of time. I'm very sad to say that I think it is. I'm the one who came up with that. I have it on a spreadsheet because I have been working on who is. And if you read all of the documents and you go over all the comments and you follow the email traffic, which you have to because things move in the email traffic, and you discuss with your own constituency and stakeholder group, well, you're up to 30 hours pretty quick. So division of labor will help us reduce that amount, and the very thorough organization, because I realize if you've got a day job, if you've got kids, if you've got a family life, you don't have 30 hours, you know, let's face it. And I frankly don't really want to spend 30 hours a week on this on this alone, because I've still got other groups that I'm on, you know, like the RDS review. So we need to cut that down to a manageable size. And so that takes organization and willing hands, and I'm sure it can be done. But, you know, we often work in a kind of haphazard manner because we're a bunch of volunteers. But we need leadership, and we need management of tasks, and we need somebody keeping track, and, you know. So there's all kinds of roles for people who don't necessarily know much about who is. So feel free. Thank you.
Thanks, Stephanie, for this transition, because I will take opportunity to make some points. Indeed, we have to do this division labor, and to use the different kind of resources. So I think we can collect the policy committee to support the work. We will do the logistics to coordinate like calls, we have explaining this and so on, and thinking any other channel that can be helpful for those appointed to the APDP team. And so also how we can include everyone and to see what are the interests or what they want to, what kind of volunteering they want to do. So that's something that is in our to-do list, and hopefully we can share more information in the coming days. I think we can expect that the first meeting for the APDP team will be in 2 weeks, roughly. So we have the time to prepare and organize ourselves. And hopefully we can share more details and information in coming days. And also I want to send a reminder today, at least my time today, regarding the call for volunteers to APDP team. So I encourage those who feel that they are satisfying the requirement and having the experience and they want to help to apply. I mean, the more we have candidates that will help us at the policy committee to make a selection. And any kind of help is welcome. It's not necessary just you have to be appointed to that APDP team. As we said, there is this idea of backup and support and doing many kind of activities. And I think if there is no objection, we will extend by 24 hours the call, so to make it more, to open the opportunity for more people to apply, since we are doing all this in a really short time frame, and so we are trying to put all chances in our side for success here. So I wanted to make those points, and we will organize ourselves, and we try to coordinate. It will be a really busy 6 months, but I think we can achieve a lot if we are doing it as a team and working together. Okay, that's it. And I think we almost spent 1 hour on the EPDP, so we can, if there is no other question or comment, we can move back to the rest of the agenda. And I want to thank Stephanie again for the briefing and responding to all comments and questions. Thanks, Stephanie. Okay, so let's move back to the agenda. Okay, so let's do the Genesis Council agenda, please. Okay, so as usual, we'll skip all the administrative part of the agenda, just like an update of minutes and so on. There is nothing in the consent agenda, but the first item of substance and for vote is related to ICO-NGO access to curative rights protection mechanisms. So we talked before about this working group because there was a motion from the Genesis Council in its last meeting asking the working group to deliver its final report in July for council consideration. And so we get that after, some hiccup, but we get this this report. But this motion is not really about approval yet of the report and the recommendation, because one question is how how we will how the council will develop a possible path to resolve the inconsistency between the GAG advice and the price, you know, so policy recommendation. The whole thing about this working group is really that kind of concern raised by the GAG before, and they put, I think, in several of their GAG advice regarding this topic. And to be honest, I didn't check yet the report, and I don't think anyone within NCSG did yet. But if someone did it, that would be helpful if he can give us some updates. But so I think it's kind of we will have we need time to review those recommendations. While I'm not expecting that they are really responding to what the IGO and NGO are asking for. And so we have to think how we will deal with the GAC and likely the board on this matter. So I'm not really knowledgeable about this working group in terms of discussion, and I don't recall who was there. I think it was in the beginning it was Kathy. I'm not sure you continue to be involved there or who else. I mean, because it took like more than 4 years, and so many people kind of drop it from that working group, and this is one of the main issue with it in terms of finding reaching consensus about the recommendation. And I see, Kathy, you are in the queue already. Yeah, please go ahead.
Yeah, Rafiq, this is Kathy. I did drop out about 2 years ago because this was moving. It was moving very, very slowly, and so I was doing much more work on the rights protection mechanism. But this is a really complicated problem with one person who really wanted to kill the working group. And I think we have to, I don't know, it's too bad because a lot of good work went into this working group. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. I think since we didn't have really time to go through the report and so on. If it's checking the motion, I think if it's not about approving the report for now, we'll have around 1 month till the next meeting in August to make an opinion about it. So I would really ask every counselor to make efforts to go through it. We need to be careful. So because we are not involved in this PDP and we don't have people there, so we need to pay more attention. But checking, I think, the motion, I don't see that we are approving the recommendation yet. So just this is the whole question, how to deal with the GAC advice, and this maybe can raise concern for us in terms of how much the GAC advice should have impact on the recommendation coming from GNSO PDP process. Okay. And any question or comment on this one? Okay, I don't see any question or comment. I know that's not straightforward. Okay, so maybe we can move to the next agenda item, not item number 5, since we already spent the EPDP. And I think we have now clarity about the charter. For the vote, I think we can shape that in the next 2 days just to be sure how we should vote as a group to avoid any kind of, if we are voting yes or not, we should do it as a group, and we to make opinion about that. Okay, so the next agenda item is number 6, which is the short and long-term option to adjust the timeline for specific review and organizational review. So this is two public comments regarding the timeline for NICAN. So there is one just to make changes related to the ATRT3 and RDS, but I think RDS was dropped since it's the review team is already in the middle of its work, and the other is document is suggesting that we don't have more than one specific review and three organizational review at the same time, just to avoid to have so many in 1 year. We have from our side in NCIG two drafts that were made by Farzana, and they are under discussion and under review. So if you want to make comment, you can find the links and in the mailing list. But here, this item is the council. If the council will make it draft its own comment for those two public consultation, I don't think we have any draft yet. And so what we can expect is just to get an update from the small team taking the lead to work on the draft comment. Okay, any question? Okay, I don't see any. And I think for Zana, you are only in listen mode, so I cannot ask you about our she's not here. I cannot ask her about our own public comments. Okay, so we can move to the next agenda item, which is about the consideration of the CCWG accountability work stream to final report. Cross-community working group finalized its work and delivered the report to the charting or organization. And so we will get an update here, I think, from the co-chair and also the GNSO appointed members to give kind of briefing or highlights about the different recommendation in this report. The council can make, an opinion about the report and then for approval, maybe in the next, meeting if possible. I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with the recommendation of the report. We have several of our members that, led the different subgroups as a rapporteur. So as a group, really as a stakeholder group, we influenced a lot the outcome of this cross-community working group. And from our previous public comment response, we are supporting, we have maybe some concerns and some recommendations, but in general, we are supporting the report of the CCWG and accountability. Okay. Okay. Any question or comment? Okay. I don't see any question. It should be okay, just an update and preparing for the vote in the next meeting, so I don't see any concern now. Okay. So for the next agenda item is council discussion regarding the GNSO policy development process 3.0. For those who remember, the GNSO Council had its strategical and planning meeting in LA the beginning of this year, and we discussed a lot about the different issues with PDP, and we had a paper from the staff from their perspective what they see as a problem. And so we initiated kind of consultation in Sahuan meeting, allocating a whole morning in the usual Genus working session to get input about this kind of issue and try to see what is the path forward and what we can do as a council and as a community to make the PDP more effective and efficient. And the outcome was a report or a paper summarizing several idea for improvement based on what we get as input in that time. And we have this now document for 4 weeks and month now. But fortunately, because the focus on the EPDP, we didn't have so much input except from the business constituency. The other group, they didn't share any input, including ourselves, while we tried to do that. And so it was agreed in the meeting, in Panama meeting, to get an extension till mid-August to allow all stakeholder group and constituency to share their input on the paper. So this is one of our to-do list, and we will try to make input. Because this kind of can be. It's an effort we started, and we should not drop it, even if we have now the EPDP, and it's still validity for the council as the manager of policy to ensure that PDP deliver within the timeline and within the budget and the resources and so on. So this agenda item is we kind of trying to. It's more like to prepare for the next steps and how we can. How we can use the input we will receive. So we are expecting that all of you share their input, including ourselves, and the council will discuss here about the next steps. So we started this effort, and we need to get it done. We try to share later the paper for information, and I think it's interesting in many aspects for people to see what kind of what are the room for improvement, and you can see the link of the paper already in the agenda if you you want to read it. And just to add, it's no worry. I have all this in my own to-do list, and I will chase people that we can get this done. So no worry about that. Okay, any question or comment? Yeah, thanks, guy. I mean, it would be helpful to hear any question. I'm not sure if you love or like my voice, but I also appreciate if you have any question or comment. Trying to respond to them. So. Okay. Seeing none, can move to the next agenda item. Which is a council discussion regarding instructing the standing selection committee to reconfirm Genus appointment on the third accountability and transparency review team. So we, how to say, usually the appointment or selection different review team from Genus is tasked by the council to this standing selection committee. And it did its work like a while ago, I think, in September 2017, to appoint, to make a list recommendation for representative also to the ATRT3. So we have three candidates that they will be guaranteed. I mean, they have a guaranteed seat. And the other four, that kind of, we give the name, and it depends, like, the discussion between the SO and AC leaders, so they can more from each group. So, but we got the situation here, unfortunately, is that one of the three was Stefan van Gelder, and he passed away in last March. So we are here in a situation that we may need to replace him. And also, since this the appointment was made quite a while ago, we need to reconfirm that those in the list are still available and ready. So that's why we are asking here the standing selection committee to do that work. We have to do that with the expectation that this review team, the accountability and transparency, will start as soon as possible, because it's quite important in terms of accountability mechanism. And regardless of the previous public comment we talked about regarding adjusting the timeline. So, so this is basically kind of task to be given to the SSE. As far as I recall, in the, that list of seven, one of the three, top three is Wolfgang Landwichter, who's from NCLG. Then we have Tatiana and Michael. So, there is possibility we can get more from NCAG, and so this is something to get. So the SSC will work on the kind of the confirmation. I know that I'm not sure if Tatiana is here. Yes, you are here. So I know that maybe you. To withdraw your candidacy. Yes, Aidan. So that's the point. It's really about reconfirming that those selected, we want to continue and filling the vacant place. Because it was really long time ago, and you see how many things happened. It's not just for Stefan van Gelder, for example. I think Brian Cute left his job as the CEO of PIR, and so the question is he still available for this review team or not? So this is the task the council will give to the standing selection committee to work on. Yes. So Michael is in the next in the queue. So I think he has strong chance to be in the top three. Okay, any question or comment on this? I hope I was enough clear and not boring. Okay. I see no comment or question. But yes, that's the thing. If when we do appointment the process for a long time, many things change in the meantime. And that's why we have to be, quick and swift on what we are doing in ICANN. I mean, it doesn't make sense. Appointment for starting a review team takes forever to be initiated. Okay, so what else? And the rest is just any other businesses. ICANN 63 planning. So starting the planning for the next meeting that's in Barcelona. So we get just some updates what's going on. I think for NCAG starting planning for its own session there. And also proposed updates of the consensus policy implementation framework and post-implementation consensus policy review framework. That's really was in the agenda, for was postponed many times, and we got to work on at the council for, at some level. We cannot just keep postponing it. And this is kind of framework proposed by the staff in terms of implementation and post-implementation and how we can review what was implemented as consensus policy and so on. Okay, I don't think there is much more to say about the agenda. That's it. But again, if there is any question or comment, please do so. Okay, I see one. So let's go back to the NCAG agenda. Okay. So, as usual, agenda item is about giving a policy update, starting first with the public comment and to remind what we have as open public comment and to see if there, for some, if there is any anyone want to volunteer to join the drafting team or to cover a public comment that doesn't have any pen holder. And so, yes, so what we have first is the Open Data Initiative data set and the metadata. We have kind of quite large drafting team, I think 5 or 6, relatively large, and they are making steady progress. They had several calls, and they are working and going through the list of, the spreadsheet that was shared by in the public comment, and they did the some triage and so on. So they are making progress, and I think they will share their draft hopefully by this Wednesday, the 18th or 18th of July. So this is one that in good shape, I think. The second, the proposed renewal of .coop sponsored registry agreement. I think we had only 1 or 2 person working on this. I tried to get an update. Unfortunately, I couldn't hear anything. So this one public comment we have to be careful about. So I'm not sure we have any progress for now. But I keep being optimistic that maybe we can get something. I am monitoring this one. And we have really short time if we want to get something done for this one, just 10 days. The third is the draft proposal of the new fellowship program approach. There is also quite a relatively large group working on this draft. I think they have some discussion about because what happened, there are several ideas and comments, so now it's more how they need to get, how they have to get one to share the draft. So there is a still discussion on this, and I will check with the group again by when they can share their draft with the membership, since that should be done within the next 10 days. The two next, the short-term option and the long-term option. We got the draft shared in the mailing list last week. They were done by, they were drafted by Farzana. One of them still needs some work, is the long-term option, but I think the short-term is almost done and just need people to comment or add their thoughts there. The other one is the initial report on the protection for certain Red Cross names and all GTLD. I think we got 2 or 3 people from the policy committee to that will be led by Farzana. And the same for the independent review process implementation oversight team, that also will be led by Farzana. So this is kind of under risk, but at least for now we get volunteers to work on them, and I am also monitoring those two public comments. Okay, the last one is the initial report and the new GTAD subsequent procedure policy development process. That one is quite heavy. That's, I'd say, a big report. And a lot of recommendation and question. So we get two volunteers here. It's Bruna and Elsa. And then we start working within this week, having a kind of kickoff. And I understand that Robin and Kathy are offering their help and support for them if they need any help. And just a heads up, we'll have a webinar about the subsequent procedure report in early August, so we are organizing that. The idea is to have a webinar so we can go through the report and give an update, so to share the highlights, what are the recommendation and question. So this is one is quite important, and we need more people to join it to help because there are many things to cover, and so we can share to divide the work here. So if someone wants to volunteer or something, please let me know, and I can put you in touch with the drafting team. So that was the update about the current status of the public comments. As Aidan said, that we have 8 comments that we need to respond, but that's what we get, and that's what we do at the end. So even if we get the EPDP now, with when we are focused, we still have to do the other policy work. So, again, if someone wants to volunteer or to help, please let me know here or just send me an email, and I will put you in touch with the drafting teams for those public comments. Okay. Oh, Kathy, please go ahead.
Hi, Rafiq. I wanted to put in a plug. As you said, I'm going to be part of the subsequent procedures group, and I wanted to put in a plug. It's a huge, we need lots of people, and it's actually a really exciting, it's really exciting comment period. We're creating the next round and possibly many next rounds of new GTLDs, and this is something that we were really excited about in NCSG, was creating the first round of new GTLDs. It took a long time to create them. So there were 5 sub-teams of the subsequent procedure working group. They all came back, and not just, this is a really strange interim report. They didn't just come back with policy recommendations. They came back, in some cases, with lots and lots of questions. It's kind of a pre-policy recommendation. So, you know, if you have any kind of interest in new GTLDs, there's got to be some sub-team that's looking at something you're interested in. And so, yeah, we could use lots of help in this, but also it's going to be a fun process. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. Definitely, there are a lot of things to do there, and there are some areas where people can help. Like, for example, I think for the applicant support, the working group, it's put more question than recommendation, and this is one of the topics I think it was discussed just a few days ago in our NCSG list. And I just try to highlight any time that the opportunity if you want to make changes now. So, again, just taking this call, if anyone wants to help, want to join, just reach me so I can put you. I mean, it's just I'm trying here to coordinate. I mean, I'm not a gatekeeper, just today to ensure that we have a group of people working on each public comment, and they can self-organize themselves. So just contact me, I put you in touch, and also list you as a volunteer in our wiki page, so you at least you can get the credit later about the work done. Okay. No, it's quite fun, Yul. It's a lot of fun. Otherwise, we won't be here. Okay, so again, I'm just making this many times. Please let me know if you want to help. Okay, any comment or question on this? I don't see any. So as we can hear the public comments, and you get the kind of, you heard about the status of several of them. What remains is that if there is possibility to hear any briefing or update from the different working groups. So I think, for example, there is not so much to say about the RDS since it's posed, but I think we still have the rights protection mechanism working group and subsequent procedure for the subsequent procedure for the new GTAD subsequent procedure. They already delivered their initial report for work track 1-4, but they are still working on the work track 5 that will come later. So it's here opportunity for those involved in the different working groups if they want to share any update or just to let us know if there is something going on that we should be aware of. So this is a good opportunity to do so. Yes, Kathy, please go ahead.
Hi, Rafiq, me again. So the Rights Protection Mechanism Working Group is still deep in its data dive of the Uniform Rapid Suspension. We've been going through and looking at this new GTLD Rights Protection Mechanism, the URS. It's an ultra-fast, ultra-quick, ultra-cheap version, not of the UDRP, but of dispute resolution. So we're trying to see how it's different from the UDRP and whether, you know, it should remain separate and what we should do with it and whether it should be fixed or not. So a lot of interesting things going forward. For one thing, we've found that notices aren't going out in local languages, even though they're supposed to. So with new GTLDs, with IDNs, internationalized domain names, of course you need local languages. So, you know, hopefully we can fix some of this stuff. That's where we are now, and then we'll be returning in the early fall, late summer, early fall, to the trademark clearinghouse issues. So if anyone's interested, they should contact me, and we've got lots of people on the list now, you know, in this call, and also on the list who are members of the non-commercial stakeholder groups. So if you want to come in, you know, it's not too late to join.
Thanks, Kathy, for this update. And yes, I mean, I think it's always time for people to join, and I do believe we have now kind of good group of many. I won't say newcomer; they are not newcomer anymore, and they it seems they are enjoying being in the RPM working group. So, which is that's quite positive. And yeah, opportunity here to ask you, Kathy, what is the timeline for RPM to its initial report? Just here, I want to know in terms that for us to plan when it's coming and when we have to cover it, as a public comment.
That's a good question. I think it's going to be early 2019. I think we'll be working on it through the end of the fall, and it should – I don't have the time frame in front of me, but I think it comes out in the first quarter of next year. And our interim report will probably be pretty concrete.
Okay, so thanks, Kat. I think that's good for us because that should be just after the EPDP. So we should not have too much workload in that time. So we can refocus our attention to respond to that public comment. So I think that's positive. And okay, can I see old
hand?
Old hand.
Yes,
thanks. Thank you. Okay. So any question or comment on this? Okay. Hearing none. In terms of cross-community working group, we saw, the one in accountability already finishes its work. So I think the only cross-community working group is the one on auction proceeds. I think they are working on their report, maybe expecting to deliver a recommendation by Barcelona meeting, but I'm not sure. I'm just here, I'm kind of guessing, because they were supposed to have a cross-community session in Panama, and then they decided at the end to just have face-to-face meeting or working session. So if someone in that working group can give some update or share any information, that would be really helpful. And in terms of review team, for now we have only the RDS2 review team, and I think that we have Stephanie there. The SSR2, they are supposed to have resumed their work, but they're just trying to kind of fix the several issues they had before. So we should hear from them maybe in the coming month. But that's what we have as current review teams. Okay, so I just put here, I want to highlight about the cross-community working group and auction proceeds and review teams, but if there is any update or something to share, I don't want to put you, Stephanie, on the spot, but if you have anything to share, even just in the chat, that would be really helpful. Okay. Okay, I think that's it in terms of working groups and the review teams.
Hi there.
Oh, Stephanie, yeah, we can hear you. Yep.
What were you looking for in terms of an update?
I asked about two things, in fact. One about the cross-community working group and auction proceeds, because that's, I think, the only cross-community working group that is operating now. I'm not talking about the one on internet governance, because that's a different beast. And also I was asking question about the RDS review team, because I think that's the only review team in going now. So.
Right, and with respect to the auction proceeds, I have not been able to attend the meetings lately, so I think I'm going to have to step off that group, assuming that I am accepted to work on the EPDP. It's just too much work at the moment. The auction proceeds is going very slowly, but I've had conflicts with the calls, so I think they're about to release some kind of an interim report, but I'm really not up to date, and I have no time at the moment. On the Who Is review team, we are chugging along. A lot of the subgroups have also been too busy to produce their subgroup reports. So I'm actually done mine on anything new, and in particular the security team has been slow and several others. So we have, if you go to the Who Is Review Team website, you will see a very handy little chart of what's done, what's not done, what has been shared with the working group and what hasn't. We are heading to Brussels for yet another wretched face-to-face meeting for 2 days on July 26th and 27th. So the goal is to have a draft interim report by then. I believe that Alan is thinking of pushing that timeline further back, but we certainly hope to have a draft out for public comment by Barcelona. Again, he's trying to push for a high-interest session at Barcelona on this. Quite frankly, I don't believe it's high interest anymore, if it ever were high interest. So I hope he doesn't get it, because personally there's a lot of things we need to work on the EPDP that are a lot more high interest than this. So that's it in a nutshell. I will, of course, as soon as we have a draft, send it to the policy committee for review. Just so that you know what's in there. Again, I haven't been able to push everything back because Volker and I are seriously outnumbered on this working group by folks who want Who Is to continue as it is and become more accurate. So That's a 5-minute summary.
Thanks, Tiffany. I think that's quite perfect because you give us sense by when we will have the report, and so we can plan for that. So if it's going happening by Barcelona meeting, then coincidentally probably with the same time with one of the the first deliverable of the EPDP, so we know that we will have some workload to cover that. But anyway, at least having this help us in terms of planning and knowing what's coming. Okay, thanks again, Stephanie. And just check here if anyone has any question or comment. Okay, I see none. Okay, Tato, can you please, I think you are in the Adobe Connect, so.
No, I'm actually using a mobile phone to connect to the call. Thanks. Can I go ahead?
Tato, please, let me just finish so I can go to the next agenda item. I can give you the floor. Okay, so I think we are done about the update in terms of policy. But if you see people have any question or comment, you can ask us anytime in the main in Greece or chat now if there is still time. We are moving to the next agenda item, which is just any other business, and this is opportunity to put any agenda item or question or any update that they, anyone want to suggest. But I see that Tatu, since you are not in the Adobe Connect and you wanted to intervene here, so the floor is yours. So Tatu, please go ahead.
Oh, thanks very much, Tatu Mfikwe. Basically, my comment was around volunteers. Who can participate in the cross-community working group on ocean process. I think as the FC, we have an interest in participating in these discussions so that we are able to provide some updates to the wider community. I think links or leads would help at this stage in order for the FC to start getting involved in the deliberations of this particular cross-community working group. Because during item 62, we never actually got opportunity to attend this type of meetings. That's just a simple comment. Thanks.
Thanks, Tatu. Regarding the cross-community working group and auction proceeds, my understanding that's an open working group. So if the member of the NCIG Financial Committee want to join or to participate, think they can do that. So we just heard about maybe the kind of what the which level they are working on, but I think it's still open for participation, and you can join anytime. I think that's quite open, and probably maybe Stephanie can and Ulf also. I think Ulf also are participating. They can give you some guidance about the participation there and trying to catch up quickly. Okay. So, as I said, we are moving to any other business section. And so if someone wants to suggest any topic for discussion or question, that's a good opportunity to do so. Okay, I don't see any. We have Peter and Martin muted. I'm not sure if they want to intervene or just to.
Yes.
Martin?
Yes, just a quick note on the emoji issue. that we already finished the draft. We're going to be sharing it with the council. And it's just basically the thing that we agreed on the council meeting, which is to support the recommendations of Patrick Sandstrom.
But I think that you are talking about the team from the GNSO to respond to the emoji resolution from the board.
Yep.
Thanks for that. Okay. Okay, so I see that I'm not sure if Peter wanted to intervene here or just is unmuted. Yes, Peter?
Sorry. It's a mistake, sorry. I think
I mean, if you're trying to speak, we cannot hear you. I mean, it's quite low. I have hard time to hear you, so. Okay. So, guys, we have 30 minutes left in the call. I think we covered the whole council agenda. We also try to get as much as possible an update on policy, and I don't see any proposal for any other business agenda item. So I don't want to keep you more in the call and just really, I would say, leave you to do something else. So I think we can adjourn the call for today, but before I want to thank everyone for joining and making effort to listen. I know that's not always clear, and maybe we have to do a better job in trying to explain those topics. But again, thanks for joining and attending this call. So see you soon, and bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone, for attending the call. Have a good day. Bye-bye.